Hi, Kevin Murphy here. You're listening to Conversations with Kevin, a show about innovation, creativity, product, and purpose. It contains all the ingredients that make up what Kevin Murphy is and what we stand for. So I'm Kevin Murphy, and this is Conversations with Kevin.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Conversations with Kevin. I'm Nathan Gorman, headmaster for Kevin Murphy. Today, I've got a very special episode for you with two partners of Kevin Murphy who mean a lot to us and the brand. Firstly, we have David Cruz, who, as well as being a session master for Kevin Murphy, has developed a reputation for being one of the most dependable and talented hairdressers in the industry. And he's an all-round nice guy as well. He's collaborated with numerous world-renowned photographers like Tesh Diego, Ushel and Douglas Friedman, Raymond Meyer and more. David's known for his ability to go beyond what is typically expected and has worked on many national advertising campaigns, and his work's constantly on the covers of prestigious magazines. He's also a regular at Fashion Week and has worked with many leading designers over the years. His red carpet celebrity clientele reads like a who's who of Hollywood and New York, and it's included Hilary Duff, Victoria Justice, Scarlett Johansson, Blake Lively, Zooey Deschanel, Hayden Panettiere, Ashton Kutcher. I can't go on. I mean, there's so many there. Now, David, he excels at what he does and he considers himself fortunate. And as I said, he's a very nice guy. So, David, how about that introduction? How are you?
That was really good. And I feel better now. Thank you.
I stumbled on a few of the names, but we got there.
So we got there. Good. It was great.
So thank you for being here. So next we have Zeynep Allen, who's also known as Curly Susie. She's a passionate artist with extensive experience as a session hairstylist and also a makeup artist. She trained with Tony and Guy. She's worked with Sam McKnight and Guido. Zeynep is active in artistic and commercial circles in Melbourne, working on hair and makeup for campaigns and lookbooks. She's worked with lots of fashion image makers here in Australia, like Paul Westlake, Lewis Murphy, Charles Dennington, Amelia Dowd, Jordan Drysdale, and Jesse Lazotte. And the list goes on. But she's well published in and well circulated magazines that have that edge of cool, I'd say. So work has appeared in a magazine such as Oyster, Vogue Living, Doing Bird, Rush, Jane by the Grey Attic, ID Magazine, Wonderland, Sean Magazine, and Vogue Italy, among others. Zeynep's also worked with many well-known models and celebrities, including Winnie Harlow, Julia Stone, Cubsfort, Sam Kerr, and her clients have included big clients like, well, us at Kevin Murphy, Nike, Amazon, Strateus Colucci, Osdair, and you're quite cool too, Zeynep. So welcome, Zeynep. How are you?
Thank you so much, Nathan. That just, it's pretty incredible to hear all that. So I'm pretty humbled to be here. So thanks for having me.
Thank you. I'm actually quite glad I got through all of those names to tell you the truth, because that was quite an introduction.
Thank you.
For our listeners, I'd like you to outline a little bit about yourselves. I mean, I know I said everything there was to say in the introduction, but what do we need to know about you and your editorial career? And we'll actually start with David.
Okay. Need to know. I guess, wow, that's a tough one. I've been very fortunate. I've been doing this a really long time. And I consider myself to be really lucky, if I'm honest. I mean, I love what I do. I enjoy it immensely. And I'm really glad and fortunate that I found, you know, something that I can make a living at that's also enjoyable.
Wonderful. And how long have you been doing hair and where did you start, David?
I've been doing hair for almost 25 years. But I first started in this industry. Well, I was in the salon first, and I was working at the John Barrett Salon in Bergdorf Goodman when I first started to get into the fashion industry. But I was on the floor just doing haircuts, like normal stuff. And honestly, I liked it, but I also was getting a little disillusioned as it was starting to feel a little, you know, everything was the same, you know? Mm-hmm. And I got lucky enough, a friend of a friend needed help on a fashion show, you know, for New York Fashion Week. And that worked out well. And he ended up being best friends with Orlando Pita, who at the time was the top hairdresser.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he took me to meet Orlando at the Michael Kors show, and the timing was seamless. Orlando was looking for a new assistant. He really liked how I did hair and how I was with the girls. So I ended up assisting Orlando for a couple of years. That was like the late 90s and early 2000s, I assisted Orlando. And that's how I got into the business.
That's amazing. What a story. And Zeynep, what about you? What do we need to know about you? Let's outline yourself for the listeners.
Well, a little bit like David, actually. I also started in the salon world. It was interesting because I come from Pakistan, and I've called Australia home for like many, many years now. And in my culture, it was actually quite difficult for me to break through and announce to my family that it was hair that I wanted to do, because there's so much pressure, you know, to do...
to become a doctor.
Yes, or a lawyer, or an engineer, yeah. or some such yeah. thing. So I kind of went that path, you know, despite not wanting to, but sort of slightly later on, I realized it really wasn't for me. So I went overseas to Ireland. I was dating an Irish boy at the time, who is now my husband, but that's another story.
That would have been another scandal for the family, would it?
Yes, absolutely yes. was. So I went there, and I went to Tony and Guy, because at the time we didn't have any courses that were available. There were no apprenticeships. There was nothing back in Pakistan that I could have done if I wanted to pursue hairdressing. So I went there, studied with them for a year. All I did was hair. Came back, started my own little studio. And that's when I got into session work and started collaborating with photographers and stylists. There were some new magazines that had come out, print magazines at that time. And so we sort of became this little group of people who were pushing for something new and different, like quite different before we sort of started the push. You know, it was all very... not risky, and we started taking a lot of risks. And so that's sort of where session actually began for me.
Mm, great. And David, actually, for our listeners, I mean, we assume that lots of people know, but people are listening all around the world. What actually do we mean by the word editorial? Or what is the title? Why do we use those titles? And what is that world?
When I talk about editorials, or at least in New York, in the fashion world, when we talk about editorials, those are the shoots that you do for publications, for magazines. You know, so tomorrow is a perfect example. I'm doing a cover shoot for Elle Croatia. So that's an editorial because it's for a magazine. Mm-hmm. But and that's the difference. And the difference really is, like, you have editorial, then you have what used to be catalog but is now e-com, and then you have advertising.
Yeah.
And they break up into different, you know. But editorial is like your calling card. It's how you get people in the industry to know who you are, to get you out there. Yeah.
That's
and then
right.
that gets you into the advertising stuff. You know what I mean? You got to do the one to make money at the other, you know?
To get the clients to position the brand. And Zeynep, what would you say to that?
100% agree with what David is saying. It's editorial is almost like your folio on display in a way, without having to send someone a Dropbox link, or, you know, it's just literally something that they can just access themselves. And I think with social media, that's just exploded in like the last few years. I think if people are interested in you and your work, they can find you on socials, even if they're just casually having a look. And I agree. Like, editorial, sometimes I feel if it's commissioned, and this is only ever every so often, here anyway, like, you might get a really, really small fee that they might cover. But mostly I find that it's just, you know, work that you're doing just to promote what you can do and what the extent of your work is. And commercial sort of comes the other end. Commercial sort of almost comes out of people having seen what you can and can't do. Even if they just want light waves in the hair, but they've seen a shoot that you've done which has got crazy wigs in it, you know? So it's just getting yourself out there that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's your mark. Now, I've actually been shooting since we actually used to do a lighting test using a Polaroid, which we'd shake and we'd all stand around going, oh, does that look good? Should we proceed?
Yeah. I remember those days.
Hold it under your arm.
Yeah, but it's actually quite interesting because it was the Kevin Murphy world that really took my attention more than being in the commercial world and working in advertising and stuff. But it's a really interesting world. So, David, I'm going to say, how did you move into editorial? You said you were lucky enough to meet Orlando Peter, and you made it sound like it was luck, but I'm sure there's a lot of skill behind it. So
it was a little. It was more, honestly, and I learned this a lot from him, is he knew I was a good hairdresser already. As a matter of fact, the day that I met him, that night he was doing the Tommy Hilfiger show, and Tommy and his family were my personal clients. I had already been cutting their hair for years. So when I show up, we were all talking, mm-hmm. and he's like, oh, I'm so glad you guys met. But, you know, that, so I had already had a certain skill level, but Orlando said something and taught me something interesting that I've always taken with me. It's more, who do you want to spend the day with? Like, who do you want to spend your time with? Yeah. Who's nice and who's pleasant to be around? Because if you're an amazing hairdresser, but you're not nice to be around, there's no point. You know, I mean.
Oh, yes. We know a few of those, totally. Too.
And it's not a good time. And so it's striking that balance of being talented, being in the right place at the right time, being ready when that moment comes. Because there are those moments that hit and you realize, oh, this is my opportunity to say something. But also just being nice. I mean, if you could just, so many of the bookings I get, I know I get them because I deliver on the work, but it's more like I make the day fun for everyone. And that's as important, I feel like, especially if you're like on location and it's 1,000 degrees out and they're like, we don't want somebody being a jerk here, you know? Yeah.
And I think that's a really big case in point, because it is about the communication. It is about making people feel good. It is about making the day flow a certain way. I mean, hairdressers in general, the good ones have that skill set, whether they're in the salon or in the editorial world. Do you have anything to add to that, Zeynep? Or?
No, I completely agree with you again, David, on that, because, you know, and I think we've all been on such shoots where you go, I really don't think I want to come back and do this job again. Because it's I think, just that positivity and just staying the course of the day and almost knowing what you need to be doing at a different time. For example, you know, we're the people who are the closest to the models, like in the sense, you know, we're sort of touching and in their space and really close to them. And there's a trust that's developed. And quite often I find the models are the first ones who will say to me, I'm actually really thirsty. Do you mind if I get a drink of water? Do you mind if I stop for a minute? And often you're the communicator bringing that across you know, the art director or the creative director or whoever's in charge. So I feel like that trust and that can only come if you are an open person and you are someone people want to be around for the length of the day. So it's not the same as just doing a client for a couple of hours, walking away whilst their color is processing. You've got to stay the course, and how you are on the day and what energy you bring is, it can either lift the day or it can just put a damper across it.
That's very true.
Great. So, okay, I'm interested in New York, and I'm interested in New York pre-COVID, and we'll go into post-COVID later. But what is life for an editorial stylist such as yourself, David, in New York? Who are your clients, the agency and the like? Can you outline, perhaps, maybe give our listeners a snapshot of a week in your life?
Pre-COVID, I can give you the pre-COVID. My post-COVID's a little boring. But
yes.
So it would be a mix. I traveled quite a bit for several of my clients. That's why I feel a little bit of a hit with this. But so it was like some of my regular brands would be like Victoria's Secret or Target. I did a lot of stuff for Ralph Lauren. But then I would mix it up with like editorials, a couple of British brands like Next, or those are the ones that I would travel with a lot. And then and then I would shoot like for different magazines throughout the course of the week. So like what I'm doing tomorrow, a lot of foreign publications shoot here in New York. I think they like the idea of having a New York team. And so like just before, I had a really lovely story come out in Italian Vogue, you know, just before COVID, which was really nice, that I was really happy with. So like a regular week would be, say you do an editorial on Monday, do 3 days of Victoria's Secret, and then maybe do, you know, like another day of Smashbox Cosmetics on Friday or something, and maybe do a handful of private clients on Saturday.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Still doing
Do private clients. Like I've had some that I've been cutting for 25 years. Yeah, it's nice. It's
yeah, sweet. Me too. I'm proud about that too.
Me
proud
too.
Proud about that. Zeynep, what about you? What would a week be like pre-COVID for you?
So a little bit like that. It's a mix of mostly advertising, commercial work, e-commerce. So same thing, like I've done a lot of work with Amazon. I do a lot of work with Nike when they have their athletes come here to Melbourne. I have also traveled with them a little bit to go to Perth or Sydney just to do jobs. Yeah, so things like that, like that's mostly what my week looks like. And I also rent a chair at a friend's hair studio. And I used to do that once a week and it's now twice a week. So I've sort of over the years gone from salon owner to becoming fully freelance in session and then bringing salon back in the mix because I keep getting asked on set, can you cut my hair? Can you color my hair? So I sort of thought, gee, okay, the best way maybe is just to rent a chair somewhere I know really well and is accessible to people. And so I kind of mix up my week that way. This is pre-COVID. And in the mix, also throw an editorial somewhere more like on a weekend. And and that's what my week used to look like before.
Great. Great, yes. And you do a lot of the cool girls models hair in Melbourne for sure. So David, I wanted our listeners around the world to hear about, because of course it was really New York and Italy that we first started noticing things happening with COVID. So I'd be really interested to hear your story around that, being in New York, being at the epicentre of certainly the North American beginning of things.
It happened pretty quickly. When we first heard about it, I feel like it was a week from when we heard about it until everything started to like lock up and immediately shut down. I was in Mexico actually on a job in Holbox Island, and we were hearing about this thing breaking out in Italy, and then hearing that things were getting crazy in New York, getting hairy. And honestly, for a moment, we were nervous that we weren't going to get to go back to the country, that we would be stuck in Mexico. So I fly back Sunday, I'm on an editorial on Monday, and I had a week of work, like the next week and a half, already booked up. And within an hour, my agent calls me and is like, within the last hour, he told me, everything's canceled and postponed indefinitely. We don't know when we're going to go back to work at all.
It was extraordinary.
It was crazy. Yeah. And I wasn't alone. It was literally the photographer, the makeup artist, the model, everybody on the job was getting the same calls from their agents. Like everything was locking up. And so I ended up just, you know, going home that night, unpacking, and then not realizing that it would be months before I would set foot on a set or whatever. Like nobody really saw that coming either, you know?
No. So how long was it? How long were you in lockdown or not able to work?
Yeah, March 10th was my last job. That's when everything like locked up. And then I just did my first job back last week.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it was crazy.
Wow.
And then, tomorrow's only my second job back.
And what do your bookings look like going forward? Is everyone really anxious or what's happening? Yeah.
It's funny because the hair and makeup and stylists, well, photographers, everybody, the whole fashion community has been very communicative during this time. We've actually set up a Facebook group so that we all can communicate with each other on what we're doing as far as safety, what masks, what kind of face shields to wear, whatever. So that everyone is sort of on the same page and no one's left out, which has been really lovely. It's been really helpful because, you know, I was like, well, what do we need? What should we do? So everyone's been kind of on board with helping each other get the right things together. So that's been good.
Do you know, I take on the role of like art direction or production of a lot of the KM shoots. It breaks my heart that I've felt like I've constantly had to move and cancel shoots and throw timelines out because like me and like you and like you, Zeynep, a lot of people work on a contract sense, and if they don't work, they don't get paid. And so for me to move a shoot that I was spending a certain budget forward and then forward and then forward. You know, there's all of those vendors. It's the stylist, mm-hmm. it's makeup, it's digital, it's everyone is affected, and it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. And even as we speak today, I am now making the decision to move another shoot out because, Zeynep, you can jump in here, yeah. but you are about to go into the strongest lockdown yes. in the world.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we're there.
You're in day two, aren't you?
We are. Well, it happened Wednesday night, like 12 a.m., so sort of Thursday morning. So, yes, technically it is day two.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So Melbourne, for the listeners, Melbourne has that, and now it looks like a 6-week shutdown of all work minimum. And the funny thing was we were trying to think about how we could find ways around that. I mean, obviously I'm in Sydney. I could shoot in Sydney but the reality is we want to shoot with our team and that's it. So we just have to wait and we just have to move and that's life. Okay, so one thing I wanted to jump in on, David, in Australia we've had big companies take over magazine companies, people like Bauer Media have come in and they're shutting down all of our Australian titles. So these magazines were shelved in March when COVID hit, but now it's been announced that things like Harper's Bazaar Australia, for God's sake, yes, are not going to return. What is that like in New York? What's happening there?
That's heartbreaking, honestly. It's not quite like that, but what's happened here has been slowly happening long before COVID hit. I think COVID just exacerbated a problem that already existed, which was I would go to – it was not unusual for me to do a shoot for Allure and then do a shoot for another company. Like if you go to all Hearst publications, like it would be one editor for 7 or 8 magazines. You know what I mean? Where it used to be they would have a full staff for each magazine, and now they have one editor who's 22 and fresh out of college, and they're paying her $10 a year.
Mm. And she's good at Instagram.
Exactly. She's like, let's do a listing. And you're like, wait a minute, hang on. Let's talk about what's happening here. And they're all lovely and nice girls and stuff like that. But you're like, in a way, it's made it really... It's interesting because you're sort of when you look around and you realize you're the elder statesman on the job, you're like, oh my God, how am I the oldest guy on this job? And now I'm trying to teach them. I was like, well, Guy Bourdin already did that. Mm. We can do it as an homage to him. You know, like just sort of like helping them realize that, you know, somebody really already invented the wheel. We're just putting new spinners on it, you know?
Yeah. It's so true. I think it's an interesting thing, and I know, like, Zeynep, you've been published in, like, Shon and magazines like that. It's interesting that these kind of editorial magazines, so to speak, the magazines where people like us get to flex their creative muscles, they're actually the ones that are surviving this time, aren't they?
Yes, it seems that way. I think the digital is definitely here to stay. I remember when a lot of magazines went, like, digital as well as having... print or in some format they existed in digital as well, and along came all these like names no one had really heard of, and you know I think like a lot of these magazines will survive because really what are they relying on? You know, they're not relying on having to print out that many copies, or a production you know can be quite small, and you know they can produce shoots quite quickly, quite easily with even smaller teams. So I think even now in COVID times, for example. So yeah, I think there's definitely, and I feel a lot more are emerging as well. I work with a print magazine here called Jane by the Grey Attic. It's really beautiful. It's produced here, but it actually used to be printed in Amsterdam because they've got this amazing specific paper that they were after. But they too have started a digital component of their magazine. So it's sort of like, it feels like it's already here and it's going to get bigger and bigger.
Yeah, I agree.
And I mean, that's where we flex our, as I said, creative muscle. And I think that's important. But it needs to be said that we volunteer a lot of our time to shoot for magazines like that, don't we?
But it's an issue you have to scratch.
It's not a...
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like you have to do it.
Yeah.
Totally.
Like if you didn't, you would kind of go a little crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree. Yep. I agree. And, you know, it's the big ones that are not selling advertising. That's a big problem. But anyway, as you said, David, I believe it's the truth. The magazine industry COVID's brought all their problems to a head. It didn't create them, and I think that that's absolutely a given. Okay, so let's move on to everyone's Kevin Murphy story. David, I want to start with you. Can you outline when and how and, you know, you became involved with Kevin Murphy?
Yeah, I heard about Kevin from a previous agent. Well, actually, that's not true. I heard about Kevin Murphy first, the brand, from Australian Models. So there were a couple of models that I worked with regularly. Bridget Malcolm's one of them, and she loved like a particular shampoo. And I just remember hearing about it a lot, about this great Australian brand.
Yeah.
And Oz has a really great reputation for beauty products as a whole. Like, it seems like Australian brands always hold their products to a certain level, which is great, you know? So there was already the idea that whatever came out of Australia was going to be really good. And then my older, I had an agent two agents ago, Leslie McLeod, a lovely woman, had a relationship with the brand already. So she called Tim Abney and said, I have a guy here that I feel like would fit perfectly with your brand. So I met up with Kevin and with you and all in Los Angeles and one of your
trainings. Yeah.
And it was so funny because I didn't bring any tools. I literally thought I was just meeting Kevin and then talking. And we did. And after like an hour of sitting there, I was like, this is ridiculous. I should be doing hair.
Yes, I remember that actually.
I just felt useless. And I was like, well, let me just do hair because I'm just sitting here like wasting time. So I just grabbed somebody's curling. Yeah. Everyone was gracious and let me use their tools. And it was a lot of fun. We had a really good time. Yeah, but I felt like with you, Kevin, everyone, we all hit it off immediately. It just felt like the right fit.
Mm. It's great. And Zeynep, what about you, the brand and the man, Kevin Murphy? And what have you been a part of?
So I sort of, I suppose, found out about the brand because James and I used to be in Salon and we were working side by side. This is James Nicholson, whom we all love. And we came across the brand and then attended a few sort of evenings, like, you know, back at Ozdare, which used to be in the city. I don't know if you remember that little academy that used to be in the city in that little laneway.
Yep.
And that's how we found out and sort of just got involved and started attending classes. And then the Session Salon program was starting. And I remember we both joined and ended up, I think it was the only one at that time. And we were like 12 of, like the first 12 to have ever done it.
Yes.
Correct me if I'm wrong. This would have been back in 2008, moving on to maybe 2009, 10, around
that. Yes, that'd be about right.
And of course, met Kevin through that. And just fell in love with the brand. It was literally anything and everything that I was looking for and in my work. And I think just also meeting Kevin and just seeing the inspiration and the fact that it had come out of Session and just the story behind everything, just like it just resonated. And I think it just consolidated for me that there was life in Session here in Australia as well. And I should just, you know, restart that process that I had started back in Pakistan. So that's sort of my background, I think, in that sort of KM connection.
Great. Thank you. And David, what events and other things do you do for us? Because I do know that you hold some masterclasses and we do a few things. So would you let the listeners know?
The Shoot Me classes, which are so much fun. I actually, it's so funny because I know all the hairdressers leave having had a great time, but I leave having had a great time. It's a whole other part of my brain that I rarely get to use. And it's really fun for me. I love teaching those classes. That one, and I've done a couple of stage shows for you. There were a couple of times where there were stage shows scheduled at the same time as one of your bigger presentations that everyone goes to. So I think I was just a filler, like up in Canada.
Oh, you're never a filler.
I loved it. Never. I'm totally fine being a filler. It's good. But yes, I've done a couple of stage shows for you too, and I did Trifecta in Seattle with you guys as well, and that was a lot of fun. Actually.
Great. Yes. I enjoy that. I love the stage work. Now, we spoke about fashion weeks before, but David, what's New York Fashion Week like?
Mayhem. As a matter of fact, I remember when I came to do it in Melbourne with you guys thinking, this is so nice. they have time for coffee and everything. And it is mayhem. It's immensely fun. Like when it's great, it's great. And when it's a nightmare, it is truly an absolute nightmare because you have shows going in multiple locations. Every young, cool designer wants to find this amazing space to showcase their thing. And it's always in some crazy warehouse or some, you know, and so you're scrambling around with your 7 or 8 assistants trying to find where this place is. But it's insane, but it also can be very, very fun and satisfying. But literally, it's like a week. At the end of it, you're just, everyone's on the verge of passing out. But it's fun.
Mm. I remember one fashion week, very famously many years ago, that, of course, we went out on the last night. I couldn't bend over to pick up my suitcase at the airport the next day. Because if I'd been standing all week. I hadn't used cutlery. You know, I'd been eating like finger food all week, dancing all night. It's like it's a crazy time.
It is.
Now, Zeynep, you do some work for us at Melbourne Fashion Week. Do you like runway?
Oh, absolutely love it. Like the highs and lows, all of it. I used to do the ones, you know, with the session team for years, and then quite recently I've done the ones that are outside, you know, where we used to call them pop-up runways, and they had taken a slight different name last year as well. So doing all of those, I've sort of actually also gathered like a freelance team to come on board to support those shows. So that's been really great. It's just given me a little bit more, I suppose, insight into like what happens from the get-go and how do you manage everything from the get-go with, you know, a brief, and then how you sort of formulate the brief and communicate the brief and all of that. So yeah, I absolutely love it. Just it's almost addictive.
Yes. It's funny because that's very much how my career started. But it's interesting that my career's grown to the point that I don't do a lot of hair anymore in those kind of environments, which is I'd actually like to just do hair. Okay. Thank you. That was the first half of Conversations with Kevin.
Yay.
This is Conversations with Kevin, and it's time for our product spotlight.
Hi, welcome to Conversations with Kevin Product Spotlight. As usual, it's Nathan Gorman, Headmaster for Kevin Murphy, and I'm here with Wade Blackford, Design Director for Styling, and Kate Reid, Design Director for Colour Me. Hi, guys.
Hi, Nathan.
Hi, Nate.
So, Wade, what is Young Again Dry Conditioner for our listeners?
So it's a rejuvenating and hydrating conditioning spray. So it's a spray that refreshes and revives dull hair by enhancing moisture between washes.
Yeah, it's absolutely great for when I'm not quite ready to wash my hair, but my ends might feel a little bit dry. So between washes, I'm going to use it and add silky conditioner to my hair. So it contains Immortelle. And Wade, help me out with the oils that's in it.
It's baobab seed oil and babassu oil.
Yeah, awesome.
Right. Okay.
They make the hair feel healthy and look healthy as well.
Great. So, I mean, for the listeners, we shake it well and we spray on the hair. And the hair, actually, when it's dry, from kind of the mids to the ends, you can use it on the roots on highly textured hair that needs that extra punch of moisture. But generally, most hair, we do it from mids to ends. What about the features and benefits, Wade?
So it's sulfate and paraben-free. It's also very nourishing, moisturising and conditioning on the hair. It has a very natural satin shine to it. It's also good for detangling on dry hair, and it also will help to protect your colour.
Great. But first things first, actually, what exactly is a dry conditioner? And if we have a dry shampoo like Fresh Hair, why do we actually need a dry conditioner? Well, we know that Fresh Hair uses powder technology and mops up oil and can add texture and volume, even to fine hair, whereas a dry conditioner will not only add that kind of sheeny shine to the mids and ends of dry or colour-treated hair, it'll moisturise and condition at the same time. This will add a natural and soft-looking texture to hair that's fresh and clean while repelling the humidity. It's actually perfect for highly textured hair or for curly hair because it gives you a whole range of options there. You can use it in combination as well. And alongside of all of these benefits, Young Again Dry Conditioner will detangle and give it that soft, smooth, velvety feel, but with tamed frizz and tamed static.
So Young Again Dry Conditioner allows you to extend the life between your blow dry or just give you a little bit more time between needing to shampoo your hair. So it's perfect for all hair types, and I really love it on medium to thick hair density and highly textured hair because with all the great benefits from dry conditioner, you can give your hair a really good shake and spray it onto those dry areas of your hair from mid-lengths to ends or even on your new growth, and you just run your fingers through it and it helps to rejuvenate your style. I absolutely love this for targeting areas and especially if you have colour through your hair. On those lightened areas, this can be really good in between washes as well to really nourish and to moisturise those areas. So roots to ends or just targeted on those dry areas.
That's great. So as usual, Wade, you seem to be the go-to person for ingredients. So can you tell us about some of them?
Well, we handpicked some really amazing ingredients from science and nature for this one. So we've got panthenol or vitamin B5, which acts as a humectant, which can actually deposit into the cortex of the hair and it makes the hair easier to brush and comb or restyle. It also gives it like a satin silky finish and shine. And for the rejuvenation, the Young Again signature ingredient is Immortelle. That Immortelle is going to give the hair ongoing protection from the elements, and it also contains really important anti-aging benefits. So as Kate got me to mention earlier, we also have baobab and babassu oil, giving the hair softness, shine, moisture, and it improves the elasticity of the hair due to the potent level of vitamins that it contains.
Great. I mean, Kate, I know you love this, but will it make my hair overly heavy or ruin my style?
Yeah, super important question. So the silky dry formula, and I must say dry formula, so it's not wet at all, and it also will help to eliminate excess oil or odour while adding a weightless moisture and manageability to your hair. So if you want, if you have a oily roots and dry ends, you could use fresh hair on your new growth, and you could use dry conditioner on your mid-lengths and ends between washes to really help extend, you know, that moment in time. It also helps to give great texture and separation.
Oh, that's great. Okay, so really, Young Again Dry Conditioner really gives our listeners a whole new different range of options in terms of extending the life of their style or their moment in time, as we say, that editorial moment in time, but it's also perfect for natural textured hair as well. So for those of you that embrace your natural texture, the Young Again Dry Conditioner is absolutely perfect to add moisture, to add shine and add movement with texture and separation as well. So thanks again, Wade and Kate.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, mate. It was great.
That's all right. As usual, it's a product spotlight on Young Again Dry Conditioner, and I will hear from you next time.
Welcome back to Conversations with Kevin.
Hi, welcome to Conversations with Kevin. I'm Nathan Corman. I'm here with David Cruz and Zeynep Allen, and I'm blowing my lines, which is why I'm giggling at the same time, but that's all right. So we've touched on many topics today, but in the light of Black Lives Matter and diversity as a whole, David, I'm really interested for listeners to hear how diverse is the editorial world in New York and do you see room for improvement?
There's definite room for improvement. I feel like they were starting to be better about it over the last couple of years, and I think the last, obviously, couple of months really brought everything into focus for everyone and how much better they needed to be, how much further the industry needed to go. Without calling out names, obviously, it's a New York and it's a global problem. I was working with this one famous Black model, very well known, beautiful, amazing. And she got to a point where she refused to go to Milan because she says the Italians would always say once they have one black girl, this one particular brand, not all the Italians, but this one particular brand would say, we already have a black girl. Meanwhile, she's one of the most famous models on the planet. And you're like, I can't believe people are saying that kind of thing out loud in this day and age, let alone thinking it, let alone saying it out loud. So I was like, and we were talking about that, and I just go, man, we really have to keep this. This is something that really needs to be kept pushing forward. But I do say in New York, it's quite nice. We have seen more and more Black, Latinx, Asian girls being used. I feel like a lot of the brands that I work with have been quite good about realizing, oh, this is an area that we're lacking and we need to step it up. So that's been really great, you know.
It's an interesting point you raise, because diversity isn't a quota. Diversity isn't making sure that you have those things ticked off. But in scrambling for representation and to get things right, a lot of companies have almost approached it in that way at first, haven't they? There's a big difference between having a diversity quota and truly being diverse. Zeynep, as a Pakistani woman, I'm very interested to hear your take on that.
Oh, gosh. I don't know where to start. I could probably go back a little bit, if you like, back to when we moved here and I was looking for work in my industry and looking for salon work. I had a whole book. Like, I had a whole folio that I could bring, and which I did, to different meetings. And I quite clearly remember people just kind of almost mocking it, because they were like, well, we didn't think there was an industry anywhere else. Like, it was so kind of, we're the only ones that have it, but no one else has it in the world. And I was even told at times, like, this is so different. It's not going to fly here. I don't think the clients are going to feel comfortable with you. So it was kind of which was pretty outright, like, you know. So I suppose experienced that firsthand, sort of always having to prove and be better and do work harder so I can be recognized for what I can do, just like the next person can. So that was kind of a little taste of what it is on the other side of it. But,
well, that's right. I mean, how would you think David and I would cope if he threw us into a salon in Pakistan tomorrow?
<You'd be fine. laughs>
Like, oh no. But I mean, what I mean to say is, I mean, you know, there's different cultures of beauty and different concepts, and that can move from state to state in a country, but also from country to country. And the thing is, hair's a fiber. You can either do it or you can't.
That's exactly right.
And if people can't see that through the pictures, that's just, sorry, I'm a bit angry about that, actually. Go on.
And this sort of happened in, like, a few situations. Like, it was not just like, oh, here's one salon who said it. Like, I got that, like, from a few reputable places. And I suppose that drove me to starting my own business, because I thought, you know what, forget it. Like, I'm just going to start my own thing. So I had my own salon, and that kind of then led me to Session back again, you know, and then there was Kevin in the mix and meeting you guys, and, you know, so it all kind of aligned at the right time. But
so did you let me jump in. Did you hit that again, trying to break into the editorial world?
Sort of, probably slightly differently. I think it was, don't know if David, you've experienced it or Nathan, it's like, it can be a slightly closed industry sometimes to break into. And, you know, at what stage do you move from assist to actually being able to run your own gig? You know, like, when do you change from that? I think also there's a little bit here about agencies, because we don't have, in Melbourne at least, as many agencies, like creative agencies, who represent, you know, hair people, makeup people, stylists, and the like. So it's kind of like, that's again a slightly kind of closed. So I suppose I found my way through making my way, if that sort of makes sense, instead of hooking myself in with what was available. I just thought, okay, I've got to, like, start my own thing and actually prove what I can do, and work really hard at that. And then the right alignment sort of comes along and you just find your people. So I think that was my sort of journey, and that's where KM fits for me perfectly, is because I feel like I've genuinely found my people. and, you know, where people are actually nice and they and everyone can work together. So I love doing all that. So yes, I have initially found that. And I think on the other side of it, for let's say for models, I do sometimes even now find with jobs where, you know, commercial jobs where it's like a, you know, a lookbook, for example, or something, and they'll go, oh yeah, we just need one of this and one of this and one of this and one of this. And I'm just thinking, it's not like buying fruit, you know, I need one apple, one banana. It's like, let's get these people because for the real reason, because we want to express that diversity exists out there in the world, as opposed to we're just ticking off a box. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I still kind of see that, but I'm really hopeful that all this is changing and moving in the right direction, which is, which is a good, hopeful place to be in. Yes.
Which is the direction. Now, what do you both say to the fact that a lot of education for trade certificates and beauty schools don't necessarily include all hair types? Like, is there segregation within the hair world in terms of skill sets?
I almost think there, I think there is to a degree, isn't there? And I feel like that might be a good place for this to start as well, too, because I've had situations where you'll be backstage and I'll just send whoever's available, go to that girl. You know what I mean? Whoever's available, go to that guy. Just as they're coming in, and I've had people freeze and go and look at me like, I'm not really comfortable doing this. And like you said, hair is a fiber. You know what I mean? And if you, and really so much of what we do is a feel thing. You know what I mean? Like you can put your hands in and immediately know, oh, if I do this, this is the result. I know this is now going to work. And it's instinctual. It's something that you, I shouldn't say instinctual, but it's a learned behavior that you would just, it becomes second nature. And so I feel like when I see someone like that, I don't mind if they tell me up front that they're not comfortable, because then I can pull them aside and work with them and show them what I need. But if you're presenting yourself as I'm a pro, but you can't do anything, you have no business behind a chair, and you have no business calling yourself a pro until you can do anything, you know? Yeah.
I agree. What about you, Zeynep? What would you say to that?
Oh, amen to that. Like, completely. Like, there have been so many times, like, for example, I would have an assistant, let's say, like, on set, and they've, like, never, ever done textured hair, for example. Or if I leave them, like you said, David, like, to the side and go, hey, can you just do this or that? Or they, like, literally feel like they're just lost. So, yeah, I think it's super important. And those sort of things don't really exist when you go out there to train people, or even like the certificates or diplomas, anything that's out there. There's nothing that actually covers it. It literally just skims over it, almost like different hair types. I myself too, when I learned, like I learned on Caucasian hair, and that was the only hair I learned on. So I went back to Pakistan and I had to almost like learn myself on how to do my own hair type, if that makes any sense. And then, because it wasn't really part of what I had learned. So even that, like within hair, there's, you know, textured hair, there's like wavy hair, there's Asian hair, there's like so many different types. And I don't think it's covered in, and it really should be. Mm. And yeah, people, and if you don't know it, like now I think even, there's things like, you know, I know it sounds crazy, but like there's videos, there's like YouTube, even if you really want to just get some real basics, like even go to like places like that.
They're good. Those videos are good.
Yeah. I mean, they're not a substitute for like a professional course, for example, but you know, even if there's someone with textured hair doing their own hair, you can learn from that. And that's how I've actually gotten to learn it, from learning from the girls. Like I've actually learned from the girls in my chair. And kind of going, hey, if you have a day free, can you spend a day with me? I really want to like, I want to try this. I just want to get my like, you know, get it right. And yeah, and I've just kind of learned and just taught myself how to do it. Because I can't turn up to set and have a girl who has that hair and then not know how to do it. Because that would just be completely wrong of me to pose that I can do it and then not be able to do it. So...
Well, that's unacceptable as an editorial artist, isn't it, guys?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I mean, it's quite interesting because my next few questions have become moot because we've kind of touched on a lot of that. But at fashion weeks, the hair you see me doing is always the highly textured hair. And as a, as we're all saying that, I'm kind of going, well, that's actually not really good enough going forward. So my commitment to that is that I need to make sure that everyone on that team is up to speed. But, of course, what actually happens is the girls in that case come to you a lot because they want you to do their hair because also they don't want to be pulled at and poked and prodded and for it to be wrong, you know. So I think we've got a little call to action for our listeners, and we'll go back to the fact that hair is a fibre. The texture of your hair is determined by the shape of your hair follicle. And what determines the shape of your hair follicle is how far away from the equator your ancestors have evolved. So we're all the same people. It's crazy. You can do any hair. The amount of disulfide bonds in high-textured hair is much higher. It requires, in one way, more work, but in another way, more care because high-textured hair is actually more fragile. So start learning all of that stuff. And that's my rant.
Listeners, that needs to be said. Yeah,
that's right. Okay, so David, how do you update your own skill set?
That's a good question. Actually, I feel like I am like a sponge, so I'm taking it from everywhere. You know what I mean? I'll look for stuff online. I'll see what's happening. But even some of my assistants work with other people, and I'll go like, "Well, how do they do this?" I am obsessed. Yeah. With how everyone else preps hair. I don't know what this fixation is with me, but literally if I know if someone's working with them, the person will be like, well, how do they start out? Because for me, that's the base. Once you've got that, then you can build anything on top of it. So I'm fascinated with how everyone does it, you know? But as far as skill sets, truthfully, it's reminding myself too. So like last week when I went back, I hadn't used my hands in 4 months. And I was like, ooh, this is not good. It took me a minute. Like there were a couple of braids that I was like, don't let anybody look. I'm going to undo this and redo it because it's been a minute, you know?
Put you back to the audience. So they can't see
your hands. A couple of jokes. They won't know what's happening, you know? But I do feel like it's staying in it. I do feel like our industry is on the forefront of what is happening. And I think that in many ways, we are the creators of what's coming around the corner. But you do get a feel, like once you've been in the business long enough, you can kind of tell what's coming around the bend. You can get a feel for what the next thing is, you know?
It does. It becomes quite natural, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. It really does.
Mm. Yeah. And you, Zeynep, how do you update your skill set?
I'm obsessed as well. Like literally, I watch videos. I watch other people. I also keep trying to update my skill when I can. So I did these year long and another one was 6 months Hair Mastered. This was like an online where we had Sam McKnight was like the coach and Guido was on the second one. And it was like all around the world. So you were connected to hairstylists in that, like literally globally. So that was really cool. And so that kind of, again, was an update. And I just keep wanting to learn. So it's by looking at everyone, really, because like I was saying before, like even girls, for example, with textured hair who are in my chair, I just want to learn from them as well. Like go to the source, like how do you do it? You know, what are the things you use? Yeah. What are the things you don't use? Is it okay for me to use this on your hair or should I be using this instead? And then making sure that I keep updating my kit as I go along as well. Make sure I have all those items. So it's just a constant learning, like just by watching other people work as well. And, you know, if you're on a team and you watch how like the makeup artist is doing their work, you know, so it's literally learning on just a larger scale. So I never stop. I feel like even in the evening, I'm sitting there and I'm just like, you know, searching up this person, searching up that person. How do they do it? What can I learn from them? Mm-hmm. Because I don't think we're ever fully complete, ever. I don't feel I can ever declare I know everything because I'm never going to know everything. No one's going to ever know everything. And we've just got to be open to receiving as well as being learner and giver, both in the same role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's true. That's very true. Now, okay, As I was going to ask this question, I was going to ask about what are the must-have items at a shoot, like what's in your case. But like, it's almost like literally everything, isn't it?
Everything but a sink. I have in that bag. Yeah.
Yeah. So, what does your kit look like, David?
I try so hard to whittle it down, but it's still massive. I have, and I feel like every couple of years, people are obsessed with you bringing another thing. So, the last couple of years, it was a portable wind blower. That was a whole thing, and that I fought that for so long,
just the because
I just did
yes.
not want to have another thing I had to carry around. But clients came to expect it, and I was like, I have to buy one of these now.
Well, and they are somewhat inelegant as well, aren't they?
And it smells like rubber in the girl's face. I don't know why people really love them, but they do work. I will say they do work, and so especially if you're like on a beach or something, and you're like need a little gust of wind. It does work. I've taken to carrying large fans that fold out and using those for wafting. Just the regular that you would buy in a little market. But there's some that come quite large, like 15 inches or so. And they're actually quite nice for wafting, which are great. But it's all manner of like weird little curling irons that I've collected over the years. You know, just and the standard stuff, you know, my hair cutting kit, everything. But I think the difference between a session hairdresser, I would say, and someone who worked in a salon is that because you're carrying everything, you find yourself sometimes in the spot where you have to use a tool in a way that it wasn't designed because you need an effect and you just have to work with what's in front of you.
Yeah.
So you just figure stuff out. You know what I mean? So it's a lot of like experimenting and like fingers crossed that it goes well, you know?
Do you know, I've been working with Kevin for a well over a decade now. He still won't let me operate the wafting board, Kevin. And every time I do, he comes and snatches it out of my hands.
I love it. Show up with your own fan and be like,
"Hey,
he does it."
Yeah. Oh, do not bring a leaf blower onto Kevin's set.
He's not into them, right?
No. And Zineb, what about your kit?
I love the wafter as well, I have to say. I've got the little like old cardboard, like, you know, even like boxes. And I just, because I find they're just light enough for just that tiny little bit of movement. Like, especially if you're shooting beauty and you just want that, you know, that little hair on the face to move. So that's definitely in my kit all the time. I also own one of those Makita things. And you're right, David, like clients were saying, do you have a Makita? And I mean, you know, you'd never want to turn up with another brand because it's Makita that they want you to have. Yeah. So I've got that as well. But also I kind of feel like, you know, those baby crimpers that used to be a thing, like back. I always have a couple of those in my kit and always have a lot of hair pieces and hair extensions like clip-ons, tape ones, etc. And it's actually quite interesting because the work that we have here in Melbourne, anyway, and I'm only just speaking on behalf of Melbourne, is people haven't really been that familiar with hair pieces. So it's kind of been like a thing where, you know, you bring the hair piece and you're like, look, I can plump this up. I can add more length. I can do this. Or I can, I don't know, make a fringe or whatever. And people are like, what? Is that even a thing? And so I kind of feel like that's become now a thing that I'm expected to have in my kit is like all those hair pieces, which I think people should, if you're session, you should have in your kit. Like I don't see any reason why you shouldn't. So those things I never leave without, but I like have literally like suitcases that I travel around with. And for those purposes, having extra pair of hands is always good. The packing, opening up, packing down is always a thing, but yeah, so I feel, and also a diffuser, I never ever not have that in my kit. I've just come back to using the diffuser a lot, you know, that old-fashioned like diffuser at the end of your dryer.
Well, I mean, we do have to carry everything, but you know what? We're not a stylist. We're not wardrobe. I mean, I always feel sorry for them setting up their racks, their steamers, steam it all,
always
blah, blah, blah.
These little girls looking around massive bags of clothes.
It's true. And also I wouldn't want to be a grip, like I wouldn't want to be carrying all the camera equipment and everything as well. Okay, so this is a podcast for Kevin Murphy. So David, what are your favorite Kevin Murphy products?
All right, I use the Powder Puff, like it's going out of style. I love it. Powder Puff is great. I also use Shimmer Shine a ton. it's a mix of, I love how it looks, but it's gotten to a point now where like some of the clients that I work for, the girls are like, do you have that shiny stuff that smells amazing? I'm like, yeah, sure. Ch-ch-ch-ch. They love it. I've gotten a few girls addicted to it.
Yeah.
The powder puff, I actually do use the beet spray as well to Hair Resort. I use that quite a bit. Quite a bit. I love the texture that it gives, you know. The gel one too, actually, I quite like a lot. That's really good.
Mm. And it's good because you can sit with it, or you can, it's, you know, so use
flexible.
A hot tool.
It's so flexible. Yeah. I love it for that. So that's kind of that is one of my does it all. And I do love Session Spray Flex. I've been using that a bunch. That's another does it all product for me as well that I use in multiple ways.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Great. And what about you, Zeynep?
So for me, Session Spray is a definite. I do use a lot of anti-gravity in the bottle. And also Hair Resort as well, exactly for those reasons, like making the hair wet, which you can blow away with it. And it's like a product you can do so much stuff with. Do-over. And I also really love a combination of Young Again and Motion Lotion. Mm-hmm. I know we're not necessarily told to use it, but I feel it just thins it out. And yeah, I just love it. And my other really favorite is Killer Curls as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great. I'm hearing a lot of natural diffusers, right. Killer curls, a lot of natural texture happening in Zenon's life here. Okay, so what's it's a very open-ending question, but David, what advice would you give to a stylist trying to break into editorial?
Trying to do it now? It's funny. I actually talk to my assistants all the time about it because it's such a different business now than it was when I started it over 20 years ago. And I really, my story almost sounds ridiculous. Like now, because there are so many kids trying to get in, you know, like back then, honestly, I was living in New York and working in a salon and I didn't know how to get into the business. You know, I fell ass backwards into it, but I feel like, but like now the thing that's made it difficult has also made it really easy because I feel like you can just DM people that you really like and somebody will answer. So I tell them, do your research, see what hairdressers you like. DM them, message them personally, just let them know that you're available to assist. And because I've gotten that, I've gotten great assistance from them DMing me. But I also say yes to everything. Like if a job comes along, every job is a contact. Every job is maybe a door or a window into another great opportunity. So you never know. So when you're young, just say yes to all the stuff and you'll be amazed at how far that'll get you.
Great. And Zeynep, anything?
I would say exactly the same, actually, David. You've just spoken.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, that same thing back with social media, because you can do your research into who would you like to assist, you know, whose work you really like, who might be looking for assistance. And, you know, so it's okay to send a DM and maybe follow up with an email, you know, introducing yourself, etc. if you want to, you know, be even more professional. And also, I think just be open, because sometimes on set, like you said, David, like there are opportunities that come even within the set. And often, you know, you could team up with the assistant stylist, for example, or one of the assistants of the photographers, and you could create your own little group and just, you know, shoot and experiment. Like there's, you know, use the weekends if you've got them available to just experiment and put the word out there that you're available. So,
yeah.
You never know who's talking to who, you know, it could be one day, it could be someone who assists me and someone else asks me, hey, do you know any good assistants? And you can, if someone's like stuck out in your mind and you know that they're good and reliable, they're good listeners and they, you know, can execute well, then I'd be more than happy to pass them on, you know, and pass on their details. So always staying open and attentive, I think I would say is the biggest thing. And just always like listen and read the room. I would say also to an assisting team, like if you're not reading the room and you're just like jumping in or you're all over the place, you will not be invited back.
Totally. Yeah.
Don't you think? Like, yeah. And only offer suggestions when they are asked, because I think that's another thing is, you know, because I think some of these young kids are like, hey, I've got this idea. And it's like, may not be part of the brief for right now, but hey, just hold the thought. So it's, but being attentive, I think, is a huge one, because you will be asked back.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I think so. And, I mean, that really answers my following kind of conversation points, which were to, you know, how do you get representation? How do you build relationships with agencies? And photographers, it's about being that and being that person and being open to collaboration. And the circles start out big, but they get smaller and smaller, don't they? And then suddenly, I mean, I used to look at people communicating with models and think, how do they do that? Like, and now I'm that person. It's exactly, you know.
It's funny too, because I feel like the other part aspects of our industry have become a lot more collaborative too. And I say by that, I mean, I'll work with one photographer, but a lot of photographers are friendly with one another now as well. I feel like this younger generation has a much more collaborative sense of things. They're not as overly protective of their people. And I found that I've gotten calls from other photographers because people I worked with were like, oh yeah, Dave was great. You should use him on that thing. They're not as jealously guarding their people. And it's kind of a nice time as far as that goes. Like, that's been really lovely that they're cool and they don't care that I'm working with their friends or other photographers as well. Whereas people used to be very jealously guarded other people.
Mm. Okay, Zeynep, what do you see happening in your career over the next few years?
That is a $1 million question. considering that we've got to consider COVID in the mix, because I genuinely think that has and will continue to change how we specifically operate, like the hair and beauty industries, because we are the people who are the touch people, you know, the physical touch people. So I think going forward, I think I've sort of almost avoided the representation aspect, you know, getting in with an agency. I do work quite closely as a freelance with a lot of agencies. So, you know, they'll call on me if there's an overflow of work, etc. So if you asked me this question before COVID, I would have said I would be looking at representation next as my next thing. But I kind of almost feel that that might not be the path for me. I feel the path for me, I see more in doing what I'm doing, but I think I would really like to be more educational side of things as well, like actually get into more, doing more education and learning, going into that pathway as well. I'd really like to head in that direction along with what I do in session and in the salon as well. So,
Well, it's an interesting case in point. Sorry, David. Is Melbourne like, everyone knows everyone in Melbourne anyway. You actually probably don't need representation in terms of someone putting you forward for a job because they'll be like, oh, no, we'll call Zeynep. Sydney would be a bit different than that, I would say. And New York, dog eat dog, would be quite different than that. I mean, your agents deserve their money, don't they? And they
fight for it. They, you know what I mean? Like, they do their job. But I like that. Yeah. That's kind of lovely that it is, but it's still small like that. It's interesting because New York is dog eat dog, and yet I know exactly who the people are that are competing for the same jobs as me. And we all know each other. Yeah. We see each other in studios. And I'm quite friendly with a lot of them, actually. So, because we rarely get to meet.
Listeners, notice the words quite friendly, he said.
Not
quite friendly.
Totally.
Just a little.
just a little. With an edge. You know what I mean? But it is funny because I rarely, until I started teaching these classes, I would rarely meet other hairdressers except people who assisted me. And that was basically it. You don't really get to meet others. So whenever you do, I've always found that it's like, oh, these are actually all people I get along with and I have a good time with. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're all fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I haven't worked in a salon in like since the 90s. So I'm so old. Yeah, it's so crazy. So now when I meet other hairdressers, like and especially during this time, there's been a lot more communication with us, just talking about what's going on, where we're headed, what we're thinking. And it's been really lovely. It's been really nice, you know. But I forgot the question. I just started rambling. What were we talking about?
Well, no. What do you see happening in your career? But I think you've really answered all of that. You
know? We'll see. I mean, I feel like this, we can't think about returning to a normal. I feel like we're living in our new normal. This is the normal now. Because we have no idea when this is going to, if they're going to find some sort of cure for this. And the truth is I feel like we've sort of opened a Pandora's box. There's going to be other things coming down the line, and we just need to be prepared to shift, just like we've had to, because the business was already shifting and we're trying to find our footing. This is just another thing to add to that. This is our new normal, and we need to operate from out accordingly from here.
Well, as we finish up the podcast, I was going to ask both of you, in the light of 2020, what would you say to listeners, you know, in an encouraging sense?
Don't be discouraged by what's happening. Take what's happening as an opportunity to try doing your business in a new way. You know, like that's what I'm doing. You know, like I've started to pick up, like I said, my home haircuts, because I've had a lot of people call me that are nervous about going into a salon right now. They don't feel entirely comfortable with that. They'd rather me come to their house, do the kids or whatever, and their haircuts and stuff. And that's been nice, because that is also an aspect of my work that I enjoy, the one-on-one with people. With the shoots, I feel like a lot of .coms, a lot of e-com work, they're going to start moving towards using one person who does hair and makeup. And so I feel like now my money from advertising work is going to come solely from advertising jobs, bigger jobs, people where they have the budget and they want, the quality is more important. They want separate hair and makeup, you know? So I just need to make a personal shift as far as all that goes. Editorial, I think, will stay the same.
There's two, I mean, you know, I never really want to hear someone say navigating the new normal ever again in my life.
Yeah.
That's one word. I never want to hear someone say extraordinary, but it has been the most extraordinary year. And I never want to hear someone say businesses need to be nimble.
That is annoying.
which is the new thing, but of course all of those things are true. Zeynep, what would your words of encouragement be?
Before I say that, the unprecedented is a word I all never want to hear either.
That's another one.
Like, it's like a trigger now. Look, I just think I'm also going about like answering it sort of slightly long-winded, so excuse me for that. Last time when we went in lockdown, which was like the first time when, you know, not this mini one, but the one before, I turned to doing lives. I just literally just went live with literally I approached people in the industry, other hairdressers, you know, like yourself, David, like who were in New York, and people who were like literally around the globe, stylists, anyone, just to kind of amp the mood and the feeling that, you know, it's actually probably connected us in more ways than we think. So I kind of look at it on one side. Yes, it's exposed. COVID's exposed like all the injustices, I suppose, or the things that weren't right in society. But this is our chance to actually move forward and have a different consciousness in how we approach things. So it might not all be bad. I think there's a lot to be learned. And I think like in our industry specifically, like that whole sense of community, I think it's probably going to bring people closer together, despite not necessarily being in the same space. Like, for example, what you're doing, Nathan, like bringing us in the same space. So I think there's a lot to be learned. And I think it's a positive thing coming out of not a positive thing.
Yeah.
So I think at the end.
You know, I've actually flown during the pandemic. I've flown. Now, you did not realise how filthy planes were until you get on a plane and you fly right now. So there are going to be many, and I'll say the same thing for taxi cabs. I mean, there are going to be many changes post-COVID that will absolutely stay around and will permeate all of our lives.
And, like, the idea of going into a bar now and being crowded with people.
Yeah.
A seedy bar.
That is so disgusting to me now. And I would go meet people after work all the time for that. Yeah. I'm like, no one touched me. Why are we so close to each other? You know, like,
Yeah. I said that because Sydney's not locked down so much anymore. And my partner went out. And I was like, you're going out? Where are you going? And he was like, I'm just going to. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I'll stay home.
Yeah, I know, right?
Can you imagine being in a swimming pool?
Well,
I mean, I'm just putting it out there.
Not unless it was my own. Anyway, we're digressing. Look, this has been Conversations with Kevin, and it's been a great chat with two very special people. So, Zeynep Allen, we'd like to say goodbye to you and the listeners.
Thank you.
And the wonderful David Cruz from New York. So thanks for being here, David.
Thank you for having me. This was great.
Great. You're on Conversations with Kevin. I'm Nathan Gorman, headmaster for Kevin Murphy. Till next time. Bye.